Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. So that's what we explore on this podcast. And the goal is to provide resources and tools to tell stories, to share my own successes and failures as a former teacher, and to just have a conversation and think about this question of what it means to transform classrooms into spaces where creativity thrives. And today's topic has to do with one of the most common questions that I hear, which is, how do you manage a classroom if you're doing project-based learning? So, I want to make something clear before we dive into this topic. I made huge mistakes in classroom management as a teacher. I let certain disruptive behaviors go unchecked because I was tired and I didn't want to deal with them. And God, there were so many fires to put out. I had moments that were a lot worse, though, where I shamed a student. I had times when I yelled at a classroom, and I didn't yell at the classroom, I yelled at my class, let's just be clear. I won't even use the term raise my voice, which sounds nicer. I yelled, I want to own it. And each time I apologized and continued to grow, and each time students were amazing in their ability to forgive. But the reality remains, I had tons of moments when I failed in this area. So I feel a certain reticence when tackling the question, how do I handle classroom management in a PBL unit? But I also realized that my mistakes, as cringeworthy as they may be, were also learning experiences. Teaching is an iterative process filled with experiments. I believe we can learn as much from our failures and mistakes as we can from our successes. And so, with that in mind, I'd like to share what I learned about PBL and classroom management from my 12 years teaching middle school and my last 3 years working with new teachers at the college level. So let's go ahead and dive right in. When I was new to project-based learning, people told me to, quote, embrace the chaos, unquote. I tried my hardest to embrace that mindset. Our class would be a vibrant space filled with noise and chaos and movement and all of that, right? I told students that during our project time, they could go wherever they wanted to go. They could talk as much as they wanted to talk, as loud as they wanted to be, and that they can move around and work wherever they wanted to work. This lasted for about 3 days. That's right, 3 days. See, I had students wandering around the classroom for the entire class period, socializing with friends, and never actually working on their project. The room became ear-splittingly loud, and I became kind of edgy. The chaos didn't feel constructive. It felt off-task. And at times, it even felt kind of unsafe. And at one point, a teacher from another classroom walked into my room and said, "Why'd you kick Alejandro out of class? He's normally so quiet." But the thing is, I hadn't kicked Alejandro out. He'd walked away because he felt anxious being in that space. Alejandro wasn't alone. I printed up a quick survey, this was before the Google Forms days, to see how students felt about the classroom environment, and the majority of them felt like they were less likely to be on task. Two-thirds described having a hard time concentrating. For all the talk of freedom, this freedom wasn't working. It was actually preventing students from engaging in creative work. So the next morning, I had coffee with my mentor, and I lamented. I thought the project was authentic. I thought I could create something so student-centered that it would work. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just not able to do it. He furrowed his eyebrows and said, "You ever work on a project when you're here at Starbucks?" I nodded. "Okay, then I want you to watch the people in Starbucks and just tell me the trends that you're seeing." I described people sitting at the tables and occasionally standing at a tall table. They moved to get coffee, to use a restroom, to order items, but honestly, they were never really crazy. They weren't running around or anything like that. And although the environment was noisy, it was mostly due to the grinding of coffee and the blending of beverages and the music playing in the background. It truly wasn't that loud, and it actually felt relaxed and calm. Most people were talking at a reasonable volume. And they followed these unspoken norms that allowed for communication and collaboration and work. He then challenged me to think of all the spaces where I had done my best individual and collaborative projects. And again, these were spaces designed for communication and deep thinking and deep work. And some of the spaces were noisier, some of them were quieter, but none of them felt so chaotic or so loud that I couldn't focus, right? And I realized something critical at that moment. If we want students to engage in authentic projects, we need to design systems and structures that facilitate collaboration and creativity. For all the talk of embracing the chaos, it turns out that classroom management is actually pretty important. So with that in mind, I want to tackle some of the myths that people have about PBL and classroom management. Myth number one is that structure ruins creativity. This was the myth I had bought into when I first embraced the PBL process. Like I mentioned before, I had created this classroom environment free of constraint. Go where you need to go, be as loud as you need to be, take the John Mayer route and run through the halls of your high school and scream at the top of your lungs. That's right, I just paraphrased John Mayer. But the idea was that I wanted students to feel free. This came from a genuine recognition that school structures often feel arbitrary and overly restrictive. But I had gone too far the opposite direction, and I had mistakenly believed in this false dichotomy between student ownership and classroom expectations. The reality, however, is that well-designed structures can actually facilitate creativity. I like to think of it like architects, right? Architects often design spaces with two competing goals at the same time. Craft spaces that reflect the way people will actually use them, right? This is kind of the empathy-driven approach. And then also create spaces that will lead to specific desired behavior, which is kind of a, I guess you could say, a behaviorist approach. And so I'm going to give the example of Panera, which is not Starbucks, but it's kind of in the same vein, right? So if you think about Panera, the physical layout reflects the need for both open and closed spaces with plenty of breathing room. They are designed to reflect the way people actually like to collaborate, right? So there's this empathy-driven approach, and if you watch people working there, it feels natural. But they also have things like visual cues that lead you in the right direction. There's a clear front and back of the store. There's a layout and physical structures that lead you to every place they want you to go. It's not a free-for-all. Yes, it feels very open, but there are specific structures designed to get you to do certain things. And as I think about that, I think the same two competing elements are at work in a PBL classroom. As educators, we can work like architects designing the structures that will facilitate this creativity. And we can start with that empathy-driven approach, asking, what would this be like to experience as a student? I actually love the idea of sitting down and picturing that you're a student and going through the process of project-based learning and asking, what would I need? And then try to do that with different types of students. Sometimes these can conflict. Students might need to move, but then other students also need to focus. And that can feel competing. Students might thrive in an environment where there's some background noise, but others really need silence. And we can create the physical pathways that allow for the movement of the materials back and forth. We can have things like standing centers where students can stand up. You can have spaces where they can go to the edges of the classroom where there's more movement, but students in the center can kind of be still if they want to. The key idea here is that that we should be designing systems to fit students rather than expecting students to just always fit our systems. But then there's the second side. This is the I would say the behavior side. You could say it certainly borrows ideas from user experience design. And this is the idea of also creating systems and structures that guide students to the ideal place. And here, students should know where to find materials, where to go to get help. They should know there should be a logical flow between spaces that are differentiated. And you should have those systems set up so that students can walk through this and thrive, be able to do their creative work. I think it goes beyond just the physical structures, though. Students need to have pedagogical structures for things like brainstorming and ideating, research, collaborative decision-making, prototyping, all of that. And so there's that second piece, which is that not only are you creating the physical structures, but you're also creating methods, structures in pedagogy that allow students to engage in the creative work. Myth number two is that you need a ton of transitions or students are going to just be off task. And this was one of my biggest fears when I started out my PBL journey. I'd always transitioned every like 15 to 20 minutes to prevent students from getting bored and checking out. And I kept my lessons fast-paced with tight deadlines. So when I switched to this project-based approach, I initially broke tasks down for students and kept the same type of tight deadlines. So we were switching things up every 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes every 10 minutes. And although I wanted students to work quickly, they never truly hit that place of deep, focused concentration. They never hit a state of flow. The reality, though, is that we want students to engage in slower, deeper work so that they do hit that state of flow. Students actually accomplish more when we took out the transitions and focused on longer stretches of time to engage in the project work. And this is the key idea of what Cal Newport describes as deep work. Now, I highly recommend the book Deep Work if you've never read it. It is a phenomenal read that I think is more valuable now than ever before. When we think about distractions and a culture of distraction, deep work is actually one of those things that students will need to have as a mindset and a practice and a habit. So anyway, slowing it down really helped, and it allowed students to hit that place of flow where they kind of zone out, they stay focused, they kind of get lost in what they're doing. And with these moments of flow, whether they're happening in small groups or in partners or individually, they can work as these preventative classroom management structures. And when students focus on their projects and they're excited about it and they get lost in it, they're not off task. And when they're not off task, they're not going to be disrupting the learning of others. So it has this great preventative side to it. Myth number three is that an engaging project means you won't have discipline issues at all. When I look back at my worst moments of a teacher's, the time that I talked about before when I yelled or I shamed someone or whatever, it was never during a project. A well-constructed project turned out to be one of my best preventative classroom management strategies. However, it's a myth to think that you can just focus on the pedagogy and ignore classroom management altogether. Even in your best PBL units, you are going to have some discipline issues that have to be addressed. And you are also going to need to set up clear expectations for your students. So the reality is, yes, you do need expectations. When you first launch a PBL unit, you will likely have students who have never experienced PBL. They will need to know how it works and what they're expected to do. And because it's so different, you will need to clarify the expectations. You might need to generate a list of rules or norms together with your entire class. You will need to model and practice procedures with your students. And that's okay. The goal is to make it clear, visual, and memorable for your students. Now, I get it. This can feel less than exciting, right? It can feel like you ought to just be able to jump in and do the fun part of the project. But it's actually a vital part of students knowing how to work in a PBL classroom. Myth number four is that PBL classrooms are just noisy all the time. I get it. Some tasks are inherently noisy. It's true. It's hard to get students doing physical prototyping in silence, much less, you know, in quiet. And the class is going to get noisy during certain things like brainstorming. But during a PBL unit within a project-based classroom, it doesn't have to be deafeningly loud the entire time. The volume can get, students can be talking, they can be social, they can be collaborating without it getting so loud that you can't focus. So the reality, though, is that we do need to have moments of silence, and we do need to have strategic silence. You probably experienced this before, the kind of creeping noise factor. One group starts speaking louder, the others get louder, and then louder, and then louder. And this is why it's okay to have expectations for volume level. It's okay to tell students, hey, we need to drop the volume down in our class. I've seen teachers do things like volume level charts, sort of like noise meters at baseball stadiums. And I guess baseball stadiums don't get too loud, right? Football stadiums and arenas. When I taught middle school, I didn't do that. I just said, we need to be at a reasonable volume. If it gets too loud, we're going to take a 30-second timeout and just quiet down, do this reset button, and then re-enter the space again at a quieter level. And I usually, when I would first start doing this with a PBL unit, I would have to do this with a rowdier class maybe once or twice a class period, which is not that much. With other classes, I didn't really have to do that at all. But eventually, they learn how to work at a quieter pace and or a reasonable pace, and it really becomes kind of a non-issue. But I think it's also important, like I said, to move beyond just the expectation and do strategic silence throughout a project. You might start the class period with a silent warm-up or end with a silent reflection. You might break up the project process to have students engage in quiet, silent thinking or quick writes to boost their metacognition. You can also embed quiet individual tasks into the project process. And all of that's fine. All of that, all of those are things you can do to allow students to experience silence through the entire process. Myth number five is that you need a system of punishments and rewards to keep group members held accountable. And we've all been there before, right? As students, you do a group project and suddenly one member disappears, another member has tons of opinions and ideas but doesn't want to do any work, and you end up doing the entire project by yourself. For this reason, it's tempting, really tempting, to create rigid rules and consequences for group members in PBL units. But the reality is that the best accountability is interdependence. There's a time and a place for external accountability. PBL expert Trevor Muir has students sign this group accountability contract at the start of their units. I think that's interesting and fascinating. But I think it's important that we move beyond just that and into a place where the tasks themselves have interdependent work attached to it. They require students to learn from each other. Now, there's a video on the blog that connects to this, and it's about a better way to do brainstorming, and it starts with this idea of having students working in silence. Again, like I said, building silence into it. and then moving through this process where they are depending on each other to generate ideas, so you don't have one person dominating the entire thing. That's also why I really like with the launch cycle how we've worked at creating systems in each phase of the launch cycle where they have to work interdependently. So, you know, during the awareness phase, they're building off each other's background knowledge. During the inquiry phase, they're sharing their questions with each other. During research, they have to report their research back and forth to each other. The ideation process, again, starts with individual work. They go through a process of prototyping where they're all working on it. They're all managing the projects together. They're doing self-assessment using the 20-minute peer conferencing system. And all of those are structures that build on this idea of having students working interdependently. The bottom line is this. We need to be proactive about classroom management in PBL classrooms. So I'm going to end with a few thoughts on what it means to be proactive about classroom management. So number one, think about the procedures you will need to teach ahead of time. What are the expectations? How will you get the students their materials? Or how will they get the materials? How will you handle noise? How will you handle movement? Are groups allowed to talk to one another? What does that look like? What kinds of brain breaks will you offer when they need a break from their project? How will you help them stay focused? I mean, these are all procedural questions. Number two, think about the physical space. How will you differentiate this space for different types of tasks? How will you design spaces for different types of learning? How will you do, what will you do to encourage a free flow of movement, but also allow students to be focused? What visual cues will you create to help students navigate the space? I mean, all of those are the types of things to think through on that idea of thinking about the space. Number three, consider the roles in your classroom and how they might change for PBL. What types of group roles will you have, and how will your roles change as a teacher? How will you spend your time when students are in the prototyping phase, for example? What will you do to stay engaged with them and maybe do peer conferencing or whatever, rather than direct instruction? And so that's really something that you're going to want to think through is you know, how have the roles changed? And how do you help students navigate the changing of the roles? Finally, number four, consider how you might communicate this shift to stakeholders. Are you comfortable having administrators and other leaders walking into your classroom during the prototyping phase when it might get kind of noisy and chaotic? What kinds of fears might certain teachers face if they saw that your classroom did look a little bit chaotic? How would you navigate that? What do you need to communicate to parents and guardians and fellow teachers and administrators? And so think through, again, how you're going to communicate these changes to your stakeholders. The bottom line is this. Project-based learning doesn't have to be a classroom management nightmare. It can actually be one of the best ways to manage a classroom. And you don't have to have perfect classroom management before you jump in and do project-based learning. But what you do have are clear expectations, solid structures, and buy-in from your students. And when you have really nailed those pieces and you've thought strategically and you've really gone through the hard work ahead of time of doing preventative classroom management, then your students can be focused, they can be creative, they can even be loud at different times. And classroom might even look a little bit chaotic here and there. But the bottom line is, they can thrive, and they can engage in that creative work, and they can do the amazing, epic projects that you have designed for them to do. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Quick favor, if you enjoy this podcast, would you consider leaving a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcast? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.